Welcome to Heartline. I'm Rita Schulte, a licensed therapist in the Northern Virginia, D.C. area, and I'm passionate about matters of the heart. I want to check the pulse on your heart by taking a look at some of the cutting-edge issues that are affecting you and the people around you, and have you consider, how in the world is all this mess called life affecting your heart? To help stir things up, we're going to be talking to some of the leading professionals in the Christian counseling and literary industry, as well as hosting discussions with real people who are struggling with real-life issues. If you want to know a little bit about me, check me out at ritaschulte.com. That's S-C-H-U-L-T-E.com, where you can ask questions, find out about my book, listen to other podcasts, or request to be a guest on the show. You can also find me on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC or follow me on Twitter at Heartline Pod. So let's get going on this journey of the heart.
Okay. Clearly we need to set some rules. Rule number one, you will not touch anything.
What about the floor?
Yes, you may touch the floor.
What about the air?
Yes, you may touch the air. Okay, rule number two, you will not bother me while I'm working. Rule number three, you will not cry, or whine, or laugh, or giggle, or sneeze, or burp, or fart. So, no annoying sounds, right?
Does this count as annoying?
Very.
Today we're welcoming back Dr. Gary Sipsey, talking about emotionally coaching our kids and attachment-based parenting. So what are some practical ways that parents can engage their kids in some of these skills?
And what is emotion coaching? All right. So to do emotion coaching is one is that you have to, a good coach is not always outcome-oriented. Right. So if you're always focused on if you're looking for an approach to get your kid to do what you want them to do when you want to do them, this isn't the approach for you because this is more of a process oriented thing, not immediate outcome. Right. In the same way that if you wanted to get in shape and start building muscle and losing fat, somebody can give you a method, you know, go down to the gym and do it, workout X, you know. And after, you know, you're going to do the P90X workout. And after your first P90X workout, you look in the mirror and go, hey, you know what? This isn't working. Forget this crud. Mm-hmm. This is too painful. It doesn't work that way. If you're going to build muscle and lose fat and get better condition, you're going to have a lot of...
Takes 90 days.
It's going to take at least 90 days. In this case, I tell parents, you're going to probably need to have... depending on what problem that we're working on, we usually try to narrow it down to one area or one problem situation that we begin to work on. But in a more general sense, though, I mean, what we try to do is help a parent first figure out, look, understand your child a little bit, right? Ask yourself, how much frustration tolerance does your child have? And frustration tolerance means if things don't go the way that they expect them to, how well do they handle that? Now, some kids can handle that pretty well. And other kids, they just don't handle frustration and they start to melt down. Right? That's a skill, actually. We tend to frame it as, you know, if you frame it negatively, you'll see them as being a baby or, you know, they can't stand things. Everything's got to go their way. And you look at it in those terms and try to use guilt and shame to change it. It won't work so well. All right. But that's one. The next one is, how well does your child understand how their behavior affects you, right? Do they get that? Can they read that very well? And we'll talk more about that. How well are they able to tell you what they're feeling when they feel that way? If you ask them, why are you upset, or why is that bothering you, or how do you feel about that? You get a lot of shoulder shrugging, I don't know, you know, they can't give you anything. It's not because they probably know the answer and refuse to give it to you. It means that they've got some deficits in language processing. They're not good at labeling internal experiences. And if you can't do that well, then you can't do problem solving well. Or how flexible are they? Are they able to shift gears from doing something that they don't like to do, doing something that they like to do, to something they don't like to do very well.
So if you ask them, if they're watching a cartoon or a TV show and you ask them to take out the garbage,
right?
That would be an example.
That's an example, right? So there's two sides to this. One is, can you shift gears very well? And two, can you get yourself motivated to start things that you don't want to do? So some kids really struggle with this. Again, we look at it as you're just lazy, and that's going to get you in trouble, because being lazy, if you look at it that way, you're going to try to use shame and guilt to motivate them. And I'm telling you that those emotions don't really work that well as motivators, not that well. And then problem-solving ability is, you know, how do they actually deal with problems in a, can they tell you, you know, first, what is the problem, right? What is it that you're trying to accomplish here? What's your goal? What's your desired outcome? What are some ways we can get there that, you know, takes not just you into account, but other people too? And, let's try out the best one and see how it works. I mean, those are the basic components of problem solving. The issue is, how do we help kids learn how to master these skills?
Yeah, some practical ways that we can do that.
Some practical ways. So to do that, we a lot of times will tell parents, the best way to do this is find a topic, right, that your kid's struggling with. Right? Just pick one. Don't try to apply this to everything all at one time. You want to pick one of these. So
let's say we're talking about maybe moral reasoning and the social consequences to their actions.
Well, right, yeah. So,
and we want to help
now.
Them
if
that.
You're going to use emotion coaching strategies, then you have to suspend using highly behavioral punishment based strategies. Does that make sense? Because mm-hmm. they don't work well together. I'm not saying that you don't set limits with your kids. All I'm saying is that if you want to use these skills, you've got to engage your kid a little bit differently in these topic areas. So, for example, a common one that we run into is kids who have such a hard time in the morning. Getting up, getting ready for school, this turns into a huge battle, you know. And
meltdowns, yeah.
Meltdowns, right, especially with a difficult kid, you know. So a parent, says, you know, I try to get Johnny up, and, you know, I start picking out his clothes. He says he doesn't like this, he doesn't like that. He comes down for breakfast, and whatever I've got made for him, he doesn't like this, he doesn't like that. No matter what I ask him, he doesn't like it. He's grumpy and irritable, and if I try to force him to do any of these things, he has a meltdown, or it just turns into a huge fiasco. All right. So if we're going to work on this, then I tell parents, look, if you keep doing the same thing that you're doing, where you're trying to force your solutions onto him, right, we're not going to help him learn these core skills that we're trying to teach him. What we need is a way of addressing it with him away from the context. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So in other words, the night before, or even on the weekend, saying to him and bringing this up to him is, the first skill we're going to use as a parent is empathy. So empathy is where you go to them and say, you know, Johnny, I know that the morning times have been really tough, right? And it kind of turns into a big battle between you and me. And I want to get an idea of what you think the problem is here. What do you think mornings are so tough? That's a pretty broad question. You're most likely going to get something like, well, I don't know. I have no idea. I don't know. All right. So if you get that, that's okay. But that does tell you that this kid knows that there's a problem, but he has no ability to put it into any kind of words, right? That means that there's parts of his brain that aren't working together, right? To solve a problem, you've got to kind of put it into some kind of framework. So as a parent, you're going to have to help him learn how to do this. If you can't do this, you have to have somebody come alongside and help you do it. That's what coaching is all about. So as a parent, you might say, well, one of the things that I notice about the morning is that when we pick out clothes, you really get cranky about that. He says, well, that's because you always want me to wear these stupid sweaters. Okay. Now, as a parent, most parents, when they're doing normal parenting, they go, well, those aren't stupid sweaters, honey. Those are really nice sweaters.
And they get into this big long lecture about trying to convince him.
Right. Or this one is, well, what is it that you don't like about those sweaters? Well, they're itchy, or, you know, I don't like the way the tag hits the back of my neck, or, all right. So now we have a problem. Now, we're not going to solve the whole morning, but this is one area. Okay. So the clothes are a big issue for you. You don't like the clothes that I pick out for you. Okay. Now, that's an empathic statement. If he goes, yeah, that's it. I don't like wearing those. I don't like the clothes you pick out for me. So that's empathy. You've already got his concern out on the table. Now, the next skill is for the parent to use what we call assertiveness. Now, assertiveness is where the parent is going to sort of outline for the child what their basic concern is. Not what their solution to the problem is, but what their concern is. I ask the parent, well, what is your major concern here, Mom? Well, I want him to go to school looking nice. Well, okay. How important is that to you in the big scheme of things? I mean, this kid's 8 years old. Is this like the most important thing to you, or you want mornings to go better? I mean, where's your limits here on this? So I have to work with the parent for a few minutes to think about, all right, there's a certain parameters here. I mean, he can't go to school in his pajamas, and I know he would like to. And I'm not okay with him just wearing sweatshirts. All right, but what are you okay with? Let's just really get down to this. So a lot of times parents will say, well, you know, a cotton T-shirt or, you know, some kind of, doesn't have to be so dressy. All right, so you got to be able to state to your child what your core concern is. All right, so my concern is just that you have something that looks decent to go to school in. I'm not stuck on the sweaters thing. I didn't really realize you hated them so much. Well, you should, he might say. All right. So this brings up the third skill, which is as a parent, you have to be respectful. Okay. And what I mean by that is you gotta be the one who takes the initiative to role model being respectful and keeping things regulated.
Because that'll help him regulate his emotions.
Absolutely. Because if you lose it because he's being a stinker, then you're not sort of modeling to him how to relate to people in a respectful kind of manner. So you can say, well, all right. So you don't really like it. You don't have to say it's stupid, but you don't like it. All right. Now you've set the stage, right? You've gotten his concern. You've stated what your concern is, you've been respectful, you set the stage. Now, the key here is that we don't want the parent to do the problem solving. So we're going to invite the child to do the problem solving. Okay, so the parent would go something like, all right, so what do you suggest we do in the morning? How do we handle this clothes issue? Now, again, he's going to look like a lost ball in high weeds because he's not had a chance to do this. Most parents and teachers don't let these kids do the problem solving. They just hop into it. Well, okay, so what we'll do then is the night before, then I'll set out some clothes and you tell me whether you like them or not. Right? Well, that's not a bad solution. The problem is that you came up with it and he didn't.
Right.
Parent goes, yeah, but I'm the parent. I should be able to come up with the solution. I don't disagree that you have the authority and right to do it. The question is, if you take your kid to the gym, right, you go to the gym, you want to start building muscle. So, you know, you get on the bench press and, you know, your trainer, you know, you take the bar off the bench press, you lower it down to your chest, and your trainer keeps pulling it up for you.
Yeah, you're not building any muscle.
Right. He's working on his muscles, but not on yours.
Right. So in order
You're the one who has to do the work.
In order to get the kid to do it, we have to ask him, how does he think we can handle the problem better?
Exactly. Now, you can't, you know, a good trainer or a good coach is not going to let you smash yourself into the bench with the bar either. You're not going to give too much weight. You got to find the right amount. So, you know, he may go, well, any idea? Well, let's think. Now, you seem to know which clothes you like best. I don't know. If you're the best one at picking them out, what do you think? Well, I should be able to get up and pick my own clothes out. All right, so now this illustrates the fifth skill, which is what we call collaboration. right? The kid comes up with a solution. I should be able to get up in the morning and pick my own clothes out. All right. Well, the parent sees that there's some problems with this because he's not very good at doing anything in the morning, right? I mean, he can't put 2 feet in front of one another in the morning. So getting up and picking his own clothes out probably is not going to go so well. So collaboration would be basically going right back to the top of the skills. Well, you know, that's not a bad idea. I don't think that's a bad idea. I mean, you picking your own clothes out may be the way to go because you definitely know the clothes you want. Assertive. But my concern is that in the morning time, you're not so great at doing stuff because you're so tired and you're kind of in a real grumpy mood. All right? I'm being respectful.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think we can do about that? You know, morning time's not the best time. Well, maybe I can do it at night. Now you're onto something. So maybe the night before you can pick out the clothes that you want.
Ding, ding,
now,
ding, ding.
I mean,
yeah,
you know,
but you're getting
parent,
him to think about
sort
it.
Sort of a half a step ahead of him, but you can't give it to him.
Right.
And so what happens is that, you know, he's going to come up with a solution. Now parents go, well, but it won't work. Well, we don't know if it's going to work. That's not the issue. The issue is that you got him to go through the problem. You got him to engage in the problem solving. And if you will, going back to our attachment model, you see the parent is being a secure base for the child. They're not doing all, secure base doesn't mean that you do all the work. It means that you help them help themselves. You help them learn how to get themselves calmed down, but you're not going to let them smother, but you're not going to do it all for them at the same time.
Right. And you're not going to freak out on them and become unsafe and somebody that they're not going to want to listen to. Yeah.
Right. Now, if you try to use collaborative problem solving like this, or emotion coaching like this, just in the heat of battle, you try to do this Monday morning, you're going to crash and burn. So it's not going to happen. And if you sit down to do this with him and you try to have this conversation with him when he's in a bad mood, it's not going to go well. So don't wait till he's looking like he's in a bad mood. Catch him at a pretty good time. Have this conversation with him while you're driving the car and he's sort of a captured listener, if you will, and he'll engage with you, or when you're doing something together, having this conversation and trying to figure it out. And then if he comes up with a solution, then, you know, on Saturday, then Sunday, you may say, okay, now you still, you know, when are we going to pick these clothes out? When would be the best time? You know, and sort of doing that the night before and seeing if you can't come up with a process that works. If it doesn't work, like all good problem-solving processes, you go back to the drawing board. You know, if you are looking for these really short-term, quick, you know, what's a way I can give my kid, a number of stars if he does it the right way and has a good morning and he can cash his stars in to, you know, to get his favorite toy at the end of the week. I don't have a problem with those. The problem is that kids are not necessarily as motivated by things as we want them to be, and we're still not teaching them how to do anything. You know, how do you have a good morning? Well, does that mean that you just get up and behave and follow all the rules? Well, I get that. Some kids are just going to be able to do it a lot easier than others. You can, you know, they can be sitting there watching their favorite TV show, and you can turn it off and say, "I need you to go clean your room right now." And they may, you know, roll their eyes and suck their teeth and go on upstairs and do that and not have any problem with it. But there's a lot of other kids who you pull one of those on them and they're going to totally melt down on you. So you're going to have to teach them these underlying skills. And if you are willing to have what we call the long view, which is, you know, the same kind of view that you have if you're going to build muscle and lose fat and get in shape, yourself, and you apply those same processes to learning your kids or teaching your kids how to, you know, to think and to feel and relate and communicate and problem solve in a collaborative way, then you can teach them how to do that. But it's going to take some time and it's going to take you having literally dozens and dozens of these kind of conversations with your kids around, you know, difficult topics. You know, another example is a kid who is mean to his sister, or a kid who is giving their parent a lot of, you know, sort of nasty back talk, like a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so parents driving to school with their teenager, and their teenager is giving them a lot of sort of back talk and lip about something. The parent asks the teenager, so what do you plan on doing? It's your birthday, and the teenager goes, you know, mom and I already talked about this. You know, she should have said something to you. I don't understand why you guys don't talk to each other. I mean, this is crazy, and gives you one of those attitudes, right? And as a parent, they may want to say that's, you know, they want to use more punishment based approach to this. That's fine. You're going to talk to me that way, then you're going to lose this, or you're going to lose mm-hmm. that, and you're going to lose this. I mean, an emotion coaching strategy takes a little different approach. I'm not letting them get away with it. I'm just going to handle it in a different way. In that case, a parent may go, hey, wait a minute. I get that you don't like that you have to repeat what you and your mom have already talked about. I don't have a problem with you being frustrated about it. Empathy.
Mm-hmm.
Here's assertiveness piece. And this is unique. But how do you think it affects me when you talk to me the way you just did?
Powerful.
I'm bringing that question to
them.
I'm going to hit you right between the eyes with this is a social problem solving, social, this is a social skills issue. Well, I don't know. Well, do you want to know? Well, yeah, I guess. Well, see, I don't really appreciate being talked to that way, you know, because nobody likes to be talked to like trash.
Yeah.
And, you know, it actually
makes me feel like,
you know, makes me feel like crap, and I don't like it. All right. So is that the effect that you want to have on me? No. All right. Well, what do you think you need to do if you want to change the effect that you're having on me? Well, but you don't understand, Dad, but I've already explained that to Mom. I get that. I don't have a problem that you're frustrated with it. You can tell me that you're frustrated with it, that you've already explained it. I don't have a problem with that. It's the way that you're talking to me. What can you do about that? Because the way you talk to me has effects on me. In the same way, if I talk to you in a real mean and nasty way, you might not disagree with what I'm telling you, but you really don't like the way I'm talking to you.
Yeah.
So you're putting it in their lap, and if this is not the effect that you want to have on me, what can you do to change it? Now, empathy is your way out of it, but you should understand. I agree with you. I don't have a problem with that. Notice, as a parent, I'm not going to start defending. Well, hey, you know, we're busy people. You know, we got stuff that gets. I wouldn't go that route. This isn't about being right. This is about teaching your kids social consequences. So, you know, you may be right as a parent. You want to argue with your child till the day is done. That's not going to teach them, though, how their behavior is affecting you.
Yeah, and other people taking it
exactly.
out of that context.
How do
yeah.
you think of, you know, so you can use the same thing with, you know, a big brother who's being mean to his little brother. Little brother comes into his room and takes his stuff or messes with his stuff, and big brother pushes him, you know, and intimidates him, and you know, take him aside and say, what's the deal? And he says, he keeps coming to my room and it ticks me off, and he's not going to do that. You can use empathy. Hey, listen, I understand you don't like him being you don't like it coming in your room and it makes you mad and you want to protect your own space. I don't have a problem with that. My issue is that when you get mad with somebody, you think you can put your hands on them and intimidate them. See, and that doesn't go well around here. You know, how do you think it affects him? Well, no, he shouldn't come into my room. That's not the question I'm asking you. When you put your hands on him and intimidate him, how do you think it affects him? If somebody doesn't like what you're doing, do you think it's okay for them to put their hands on you and rough you up and intimidate and scare you? Well, why do you think it would be okay for you to do that to him? And plus, if somebody did that to you, do you think I should just sort of sit back and let them do it? most of the time they start to get that peace. So the question is, when your brother does this and you're ticked off about it, what can we do about it? Putting your hands on him, intimidating him, is not going to work. What do you think we can do? And let him sit with it. You're going to have to finish this conversation with maybe before we do anything else.
Yeah, so you're really getting them to think this stuff through.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. But what happens, see, is that parenting today, we don't recognize, especially for Christian parents, but really parents have been overly influenced by behavior theories. So they think that the only thing that kids listen to are you taking privileges away from them and hammering them with consequences. And we kind of miss the fact that social consequences are the most powerful ones. In other words, things like, what do you think the effects are on other people? Is that the way that you would want to be treated by somebody who thought that you were doing this or that? Hey, but I don't do this or that. That's not the issue. It's if they think you are.
Right.
So what happens is that I think this is the best way to teach kids the golden rule, right? You got to not just teach the golden rule. You have to sort of teach it in real life. You want people to treat you the way you want to treat people the way that you would want to be treated in those kind of situations. Well, you gotta use these as great opportunities to teach your kids these things, right? You're teaching them how to manage their negative emotions, how to manage their feelings. You're maintaining, and none of these situations that I've described to you have I or implied that the parent's not in control. It's just that you are not micro-controlling everything. You're broadly controlling it and creating a secure base for your kid to explore how to deal with problems more effectively. So that's the basics of emotion coaching.
Gary, that's awesome. Good advice. We're out of time.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for sharing your expertise with the audience and taking time out of your busy schedule to do this.
I appreciate it. It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks a lot. God bless. Thanks for joining me today. If you have a question or comment, or you'd like to be a guest on Heartline, I'd love to hear from you. You can contact me at ritaschulte.com, on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC, or Twitter at Heartline Pod. And remember, it's your heart. Keep it alive. Check the pulse.